This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Right now, I get to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Wall Street Journal best-selling author, the author of one of my favorite nonfiction books of all time, because it is so beautifully written, The Flight of the Rondon. And I am so happy to welcome you back to the program. Patrick Girondi, how are you?
Thank you very much, Patsy. It's great to be back.
Well, Patrick, as you know, I loved The Flight of the Rondon, which that's the proper way to pronounce it, I think, in Italian. When I read that book, you know, it's nonfiction because it's a story of your goal for gene therapy and all of the struggles that you have had to go through facing and fighting Big Pharma, who have tried to steal your ideas, have tried to put you out of business. And I think you are such a hero for the work that you've done. I love that book so much, but when I was reading it, I kept saying to myself as I was reading it, I remember, well, he's such a great writer. He has to write a novel. This is not just an ordinary writer. And so I was so thrilled when I got New City. This is your new book, New City, a story about race baiting and hope on the south side of Chicago. Patrick, you've done a wonderful job with this book.
Thank you.
In the midst of it, I think you're still fighting Big Pharma. You still have lawsuits going on?
Yes, unfortunately, I'm in the middle of 4 lawsuits right now. Two in New York, 1 in Delaware, and 1 in Massachusetts. I've recently been watching the Netflix Painkiller about the Sackler family. And unfortunately, my situation, it mirrors it in a lot of ways, except if the fraud that Bluebird Bio committed and Third Rock Venture committed, if they're able to get away with it, it could hypothetically cost the American taxpayer and the health providers in our nation over $200 billion. Because there's 100,000 sickle cell disease patients and 2,000 thalassemic patients in the United States. If every single one of those patients were treated by Bluebird Bio's product instead of ours, Bluebird Bio product is $2.8 million per patient. So if hypothetically you took the difference between $2.8 million and $700,000, which is what we always said we'd charge, because it costs me $300,000 to $400,000 to make the product per patient, and then I have to do 15-year follow-up. But if you took $2.1 million and you multiplied it by 102,000 people, it ends up being over $200 billion.
It's really outrageous. Here, you got into gene therapy because of your son, because of love. And what you're trying to do is keep the price down for the treatment. And it is such an important treatment, not just here in America, but in Africa, where there is so much sickle cell, and that you have to go through this. And as I said, to me, you're a hero. And I'm glad that in between, I know it probably helps you to be able to write something else. And so you wrote New City. So tell us about this book, which is also very inspiring.
Sure. So I'm a Southsider, born and raised on the south side of Chicago, always around the stockyards. Of course, we know the stockyards started leaving the Chicago in the 70s, and today there's really not much left of them. But at one time, they were the biggest slaughterhouse in the world, you know, taking up a mile by mile square area. And so next to the stockyards, there was a area that they called New City. And for a while, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, I lived in New City. And my best buddy, whose name is Davey Polenik, Danny in the book, but Davey is his real name, Davey and I would go shoe shining every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, on West 51st Street and West 47th Street. And the area, New City, ended up going from basically, it was mostly Slavic at one time because all of the butchers were coming from Lithuania and Poland and Ukraine, et cetera, in Europe in the 50s and the 40s and the 60s and 70s. And then when the stockyards dried up and work dried up, they left for other areas, and the area around New City became primarily African-American and some Hispanic. But Davey stuck it out. Davey stayed, and he became like, you know, he's Polish, and he became the sage of his neighborhood. I say in the book, he could fix everything from a broken sink to a broken heart. And it pretty much tells his story. That's what New City is about.
Nowadays, of course, when we're talking about big cities in America, just the thought of them, it's so horrific. But for a long time, even before San Francisco fell and New York is falling, Chicago has been a mess. And we've heard year after year of the shootings and the problems, and it's getting worse. It must be heartbreaking for you because you love the city so much. You work there. You were so involved in it.
Yes, it is heartbreaking. I'm a Catholic. When I was 13, 14, I went to a seminary, Franciscan seminary. I lived with 62 brothers and priests. By the way, they were great. There was nothing, I never heard of anything that would resemble any of the pedophile stories that we hear about. And so, you know, I love others because I believe, as Jesus said, we are a brother's keeper. Love others as he loved us, etc. And I really try to live my life that way. And the south side of Chicago is a part of me, and it'll always be a part of me because that's where my roots are, that's where I grew up, etc. And so it is very troubling and trying. One of the interesting things that most people don't realize, however, is that Chicago is not even in the top 25 for violence in the United States per capita. So Chicago, you get about 15, 16 murders per 10,000 people, but you got places like Detroit, St. Louis, Trenton, New Jersey. I mean, some of them are up into the 60s. So as bad as it is in Chicago, there are at least 25 cities that are actually worse.
It's terrible. It's terrible what's happening. So the purpose of the book, I think, to tell your story, to tell the story of, in the end, of hope. I was very impressed with your New City trailer and Green Castle theme song. Tell us about that.
Sure. Megan Uecker actually did the trailer, New City. I love it as well. It's no speaking, but it kind of tells the whole story. And Green Castle, you know, the whole idea is that Davey Plenick and his next-door neighbor decided, his next-door neighbor's African-American with five kids, decided that they're going to get away from the city because the area is being gentrified, and the city, together with big business, is trying to push all the poor people out. And they do that because, unfortunately, in the ghettos and the inner cities of a lot of our country, you have poor people living in homes that the taxes are 50% of what the homes are sometimes. It's really bizarre. And, you know, the people can't afford to live there, but they can't afford to leave. And Davey and his buddy dream about going to Greencastle, Indiana, and buying a house for $10,000 that's being left, basically, or being sold by one of Davey's dad's Korean War buddies. And so the whole story is the struggle about them trying to get out before they get basically damaged irreparably by the city, who's got the violation code people after them, who's got the tax people after them, etc. And that's the whole story, basically. And the song Green Castle envelopes that story. I mean, you know, we live in a country where, and I grew up with black people, white people, brown people, yellow people. I mean, it first of all, it's very ridiculous that the United States is still calling people Crayola colors. I mean, it's just bizarre that we're identifying each other as black, white, brown, etc. I mean, I'm Italian. I identify as Italian. I also have an Italian passport, and I live in Italy most of the year. But Italians are Latins. You know, you call Latin America because it was basically invaded by the Portuguese, the Spaniards, and the Latins, which were from Italy, which were from the Rome area, you know. And so it really makes me laugh when people say the Italians are white. If I told an Italian that he or she was white, they'd look at me like I was nuts. But, you know, this whole idea that the United States is this horrible, divided country where the whites are oppressive and the blacks are oppressed or browns are oppressed, it's really a joke. And I can't even believe it any longer that the federal government and the big corporations, including big media, uses Crayola colors to divide, conquer, and bait people into hating each other, which is really ridiculous. I mean, some of the most important people in my life were African American, whether it was the judge, Clarence Bryant, who when I was 16 years old sent me to away to the military instead of sending me to jail. He saved my life. He died in April 8th, I think, of 2008. And every April 8th, I think about Clarence Bryant. He was a saint for me. Big Mama, who when I was washing dishes at 15 years old at the Northwestern Hospital kitchen, I was the only light-skinned person out of 40 dark-skinned employees, and one of them really wanted to, you know, beat me up all the time. And Big Mama, off of the soup line or the bread line or the whatever it's called for the conveyor belt where all of the trays pass and you put on Jell-O and meat and broth, etc., she saved me. I mean, and then when I went into the military, Sergeant Smith, you know, a short little black guy, when they wanted to give me a dishonorable discharge because I was misbehaving in the military, Sergeant Smith said, no, I'm not going to stand for it. I'll let you put the kid back. Maybe he does have an attitude problem, but he's a good kid. So all of this idiotic idea that blacks are oppressed and whites are oppressors. I mean, Oprah isn't oppressed. I was in a magazine with Magic Johnson. Actually, I know his brother Larry very well. Magic Johnson's not oppressed. Yet nobody would deny that they are what is considered in the United States as black people. But it's really aggravating me, and it's part of the reason that I was stimulated to write New City, to say this is bullshit. Whites and blacks in America love each other. We have so much in common. We have so many things that we do together. And this idea that the media and the wealthy intellects of the country are pitting us against each other is just absurd. And that's one of the reasons that stimulated me to write many of my remembrances with Davy Polenik and a lot of the things he's going through. I was talking to Davy the other day on the telephone. Davy woke up, he has scabs on his legs, and he found maggots on them. And he called me the other day, and he said, Pat, I've gone to 3 Chicago hospitals. They throw me out all the time. You know, they tell me there's nothing they can do to me. Of course, I don't have insurance. And, you know, of course, I'm a poor guy. You know, what can I do? So, of course, I went in the internet. I sent him through Amazon, whatever I could send him. I'll be calling him later today. But the fact of the matter is, Davy is what you would consider a white person. He can't afford his health care. He doesn't have water in his house. You know, we got to stop this nonsense. I don't want to go on.
No, it's true. You know, you have faced this with Big Pharma. You see what the struggle is against the system. And it is so sad because I agree completely. I grew up in Detroit and I feel the same way. You're right. I don't understand it. It's 2023. I mean, this is why they want to do this.
It's money. It's about money. That's how they divide and conquer. And that's it. I mean, and today, the racial politics, because that's how the politics keep their power, the politicians keep their power, it's how all of the big corporations keep their power, you know, divide and conquer and put all of the population against each other. They won't ask for higher wages. They won't ask for health care and the things that they deserve because we've got them so busy fighting each other. And in the end, you know, if somebody says that all blacks aren't oppressed, you're a racist. If somebody says that all blacks are oppressed, you're a racist. If somebody says that all whites are oppressors, you're a racist. If somebody says that all whites aren't oppressors, you're a racist.
I mean, throw that line
on anyone, whoever it is.
That's why I think New City tackles all of this question and shows that people just want a good life. They want this.
For them and their family.
Exactly. They want a green
castle.
That's
all they want. They want to be able to send their kids to go to school, not worrying about them being hurt at school. Want to be able to feed them and have health insurance or at least health care so they can take care of them if something happens to them or their parents or themselves or their loved ones. I mean, you know, I always say that the worst song ever written in the history of the world was The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston. It was the beginning of the end. I mean, I listened to that song and I couldn't believe that they played it at every graduation. They played it at every wedding. The greatest love, not self-love. That's what's called being selfish. We call it in Italian, egoismo. That's the greatest sin. But along with that song, we turned being selfish into being a virtue.
You're right. in your Greencastle theme song. Is that you singing?
Yes, it is me singing. That's me playing the harmonica.
Oh, it's wonderful. I love it, and I wanted to tell people that when they get your book, you have a QR code so people can scan it and they can see the video of the theme song. And also, it's on your website, right?
Yes, patrickdurandi.com. The name of the pharmaceutical company is San Rafael Therapeutics, and the website is sanrafaeltherapeutics.com. I just got done with concerts in Italy. We did about 15 of them. Hopefully next year we'll be starting with patients in Italy, gene therapy for thalassemia and sickle cell disease. I will be in the United States beginning around the 10th of September. One of my best buddies' daughters get married on September 15th, Robin Feldman, so I'll be there for that. Then I'll be visiting with our researchers, University of Tennessee, University of Southern Illinois. I'll be dealing with our attorneys. We'll be looking to raise more money to make sure that the research doesn't stop, and it definitely will not. I'll be in the United States, and I'll be doing some singing, performing at the Tiny Room in Los Angeles in October and in a black church, two dates in November, but I don't have the exact dates. So I'll be with my fellow Americans, and I love all of you, and we've got to stop calling each other Crayola colors, you know? It's just silly. We're just Americans, and maybe we're Catholic Americans or Italian Americans or Irish and Polish Americans, but we're not Crayola colors. That's one thing we're not.
Absolutely. Patrick Durandi, I think your hero, your fight against Big Pharma, against the way that they want to overcharge everybody for everything in this country, instead of trying to make it easier, trying to make it more available, they just want to make profits. And it's fine to make some profits, but not at the expense of so many lives that really are being lost.
You know, and Patsy, the big thing that people don't realize, you know, we talk about capitalism, and, you know, capitalism is great, but of course it needs a socialistic heart. But, you know, you've got these pharmaceutical CEOs, some of them are carting off $10 million, $20 million a year, and then they say, well, it costs so much for research. Well, let me tell you something. If your CEO is making $10 million, to use a number, and then he has his six or seven C's around him, chief medical officer, chief financial officer, chief operator, all of that. Well, if he's making 10, well, he can't hang on to them. I mean, it's not going to be a happy family unless they're making at least three or four. And then they have their minions around them. And by the time you know it, you've got a small company that has 10 or 15 administrative people, and their bare minimum to get through the year is $20 million without investing a nickel in research. And that's what's going on.
And then, of course, they have to pay their lobbyists who pay off the politicians and who make all the rules that make it more difficult for somebody like you who really wants to do good for people, really wants to help people, and that you have to struggle and go through this fight. I have four patents. I've been through patent fights. They're difficult. They're so difficult. Takes a lot out of you because you come out with an idea and somebody steals it.
Well, that's right. And Patsy, I don't want to interrupt you, but you hit something and I don't want to forget my train of thought. The corporations use the legal system as their tool, as their arm. I will no longer sign any non-disclosure agreements with big companies because I know all they'll do is you sign it, they steal it, and then they say, sue me. And 6 years later and $2 or $3 million later, you know, you're done. So big pharma, big whoever you want, whatever these huge corporations are, they use the legal system against the little guy because they know the little guy can't afford it. I mean, my company is spending, I don't even want to go into the obscene amounts of money that we're spending, and that is the arm that the big corporations use because they don't care. It's not their money. The CEO, he doesn't lose a nickel. You know, he does all the dastardly deeds. He collects his $5 million, $10 million bonus, and then when he gets in trouble for the crimes that he committed, the corporation pays for his legal bill, and then it takes 5 or 6 years to get through it anyway.
Well, Patrick, I think that New City is a fascinating book, and it's an eye-opening book. And, of course, as always, you just write so beautifully. It's a wonderful read. You're a lyrical writer, and I think that comes from being a songwriter yourself, a musician. There's something I find myself, as I'm reading your writing, I find myself sort of in a gentle kind of flow. And I know that it comes from the way that you're writing and that you are a musician. So, Patrick Gerondi, thank you so much for being on Joy
Unpeakable. Thank you very much, Patrick.
And
I
thank
really
you for the beautiful,
it.
Beautiful dedication you wrote in the book for me. I really love it, and I'm so appreciative. And it's always a joy to talk to you. So whenever you want to come on, just let me know, and I'll have
thank
you back
you
on Joy Unpaper. Okay?
Thank you so much, Patsy. Thank you very much. My best to all of your listeners. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Bye-bye, everyone.